This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. All schools across Indiana have been ordered to close until May 1st in an effort to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Whether schools will remain closed even longer after that is something only time will tell. What does this mean for students? How does education continue from a distance? Can it continue from a distance in an equitable way? Today, we'll talk about the major adjustments schools have had to make in a short period of time and what impact they will have moving forward. And if you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation. We want to know how closures have affected your life, whether you're an administrator, teacher, parent, employee, or student. Let us know what you think. Again, you can leave us a comment or question on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. We're not accepting voicemails today because we don't have the personnel in the building to handle them. Again, Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. Joining me now is WFYI's education reporter, Eric Weddle. Eric, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
WFYI is, of course, our flagship station here in Indianapolis. Also with us is Emma Kate Fitz, a state education reporter from Chalkbeat, Indiana. Emma Kate, we appreciate you being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Eric, last Thursday, Governor Holcomb ordered all Indiana schools to close until May 1st in an effort to help slow the spread of the coronavirus. Had many schools already made the decision to close their doors at that point?
Yeah, so a few days before that announcement was made, there were around 16 school districts that hadn't closed. Some of those were on spring break. And the superintendent, Jeffrey McCormick, had said that about 70% of private schools had closed by that point, and 95% of charter schools had already closed. So, yeah, so most of the state had already closed their doors.
And as schools close, a big question that remains is whether or not students will keep learning during this time. Eric, are schools mandated to continue instruction during these closures?
Yeah, so right now, I mean, schools are able to kind of not do instruction for 20 days through the rest of the year. The state law recommends students have or orders students to have 180 days of instructional time. So right now, the governor has made those days available for schools not to do that. And I expect we'll be hearing more as districts kind of figure things out and if they need more of these waiver days in the future.
I'm trying to get an idea of, say, the first school or school district that that acted on this. From my local standpoint here in Indianapolis, I feel like the first schools that I heard about were Avon Community Schools because of a confirmed case on the west side of Indianapolis. Were there mm-hmm. schools that closed before then that you know of?
I think Avon, you know, is one of the first ones I think that really that I'm aware of, too. Park Tudor also closed shortly after Avon because they had some of the parents had contact with somebody they thought who had coronavirus. So I think those are the two that really started to respond quickly.
And Park Tudor is a college prep private school on the near north side of Indianapolis. So what does that mean? Oh, wait a minute. What about standardized tests? Are they off the table this year?
Yeah. So last night, the U.S. Education Department, they approved a waiver for Indiana, basically saying our required assessments, accountability, the iLearn test, we don't have to do it this year. So those will not be happening for this current school year. And Governor Holcomb, you know, had said last week that even if students came back after May 1, he didn't want them to spend time kind of cramming for these tests.
So are there consequences of not having standardized tests?
Well, in terms of, you know, the federal requirements, you know, no, because we have this waiver. But I think it's going to make it harder, you know, in Indiana to kind of track what's really going on, because we've already had a lot of changes to standardized testing with changes to the iStep and now the iLearn. So it's been harder and harder to kind of compare students and schools and the academic growth year to year. And this is just going to kind of push that further along. It's just going to be harder. And in terms of accountability, you know, the state's current method, you know, they hold schools accountable based on a lot of factors, including these tests. And I think it's going to kind of raise just more concerns or issues if you need to change how that works as we go forward.
And this comes on the heels of hold harmless legislation that was put forth that that held schools harmless because of outcomes on iLearn and other standardized tests and things like that. But you're saying, I guess, the importance of doing them remains to kind of gauge how students are adjusting to these new tests.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's one of the few ways, you know, we have as a common a common method for school to school and student to student to kind of see how they are doing on the state standards.
Emma Kate, can you explain what waiver days are and how they come into play here?
Absolutely. So as Eric said earlier, the schools are required to provide 180 days of school for students every year. And in this case, the governor felt it was appropriate to allow schools to take up to 20 days, to excuse them, I guess, from up to 20 days. So that means that if a school isn't able to offer any kind of e-learning or remote learning, they could use one of those 20 days instead and essentially not be providing school for students.
Have we gotten any sense as to how students are spending that time? If they are using that 20-day excuse, I mean, do we have any data on that, or is that pretty silent?
I don't have any firm data on that. I believe that the State Department of Education is working to survey schools and find out a little bit more about what's happening. A lot of these decisions are left up to individual school districts for what exactly they want to provide students. I do know some districts that I've talked to have said that they did provide students with, like, take-home packets of work that they can do. It wasn't necessarily enough to make up a full school day, but it did, you know, it's something to keep them busy and something that their parents can be working on with them so they don't fall. I guess the hope is that they wouldn't fall too far behind.
We're talking with Emma K. Fitz, a state education reporter from Chalkbeat, Indiana, and Eric Weddle from our flagship station WFYI about how schools are handling the coronavirus pandemic. And you can comment or ask a question on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana for this live portion of the conversation. Emma Kate, it sounds like a lot of decisions about how to best handle continued instruction are being left up to the school districts. Is that the case?
I think that's probably fair. The Department of Education is giving out guidance to schools, but there haven't been very many statewide mandates. So schools are being encouraged to provide remote learning. They're being offered different resources and avenues to get their questions answered, but we haven't seen very many, you know, statewide mandates. And that's been true even before this situation. What e-learning looked like was in large part left up to individual districts and sort of depended on what they could provide their students in terms of technology and, you know, connectivity.
I guess that is leads me to my next question. How have rural districts dealt with this? It seems like there might be a few students that might not have access to internet or good enough internet to facilitate e-learning.
Yeah, so we know that about 83% of households in Indiana have the internet. That's according to the American Community Survey in 2018. That's certainly not all students. We also know that about 80% of students attend districts that send home devices, and that's, again, a 2018 survey by the State Department of Education. But that's certainly not all students. I think schools that haven't used e-learning or some kind of remote learning before, districts that I've talked to are still trying to figure out exactly how to do that, whether that's try to get hotspots, you know, areas where students need those, or try to pass out devices sort of after the fact to students. But it sort of remains unclear exactly how everyone's going to tackle this. And additionally, some schools are on spring break right now, and so it might be a week or two before we sort of see the finalized plans.
Eric, let's go statewide. What guidance has the Indiana Department of Education offered to schools during this time?
Well, like Emma Kate said, I mean, there really hasn't been much like mandated through through the department yet. They do have a website set up that for educators and families, and they can kind of go there and see some kind of resources they could use for online learning or getting different ideas on how to do it. You know, I don't think they say they actually they have actually gone through and vetted everything on there, but there are different resources, I think, for families can start looking in. Dual language immersion, computer science, there's different things on the website that families and teachers can get to on there.
As an education reporter, you are in contact with a lot of educators and administrators. Do you think that that is appreciated, the state staying out of local business? But since this did come down from the governor, do you think they're looking for more guidance from the Indiana Department of Education?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, some of the big questions that are going to come out, you know, is just, I'm a senior, you know, who's going to decide if I get to graduate, you know, who decides what kind of rules or policies will be in place for students to move on to the next year. So, I mean, I think districts that I've talked to are kind of trying to figure that out right now. And I'm sure everyone is going to want as much input as possible as we move forward.
On graduation, I guess one thought that came through my head as I thought about this was, is there a possibility or has there been any talk about students who maybe shouldn't graduate graduating because of all of this, because this has thrown such turmoil into the very end of the semester?
I mean, I have not heard that yet. You know, I think right now, in terms of the school leaders I've spoken to, things are moving so quickly right now. Things are so new. They are just they're trying to figure this out, how it looks going forward. I have talked to seniors, and that is all they're thinking about. You know, they're thinking about prom. They're thinking about, you know, am I going to walk or am I going to sit in my house and do a virtual graduation, you know? And there's the students who probably still need to finish courses this semester. So, yeah, I think a lot of this is going to be unfolding in the next few weeks for sure.
So on some of those, I hate to say it, but less important things like prom, but still very much a tradition. Is there anything being floated around as to how they might do that or whether they might do something like that, some sort of a virtual prom or something like that? Has anyone brought anything like that up?
I have not heard that. I mean, maybe Em and Kate's heard some things, but I mean, I think already we're seeing, you know, different ways schools and classes and teachers, you know, are kind of trying to interact with their students in this time. I mean, there was a, you know, school district up in Hamilton County where I think, you know, the teachers went out in kind of a parade of cars to wave to students on the street. My daughter's on a Zoom video conference with her first grade class. So I think there's going to be a lot of things we're going to see developed for people to stay in touch and still social distance in the months ahead.
We're talking to Eric Weddle, the education reporter at our flagship station, WFYI. Emma Kate Fitz as well, state education reporter at Chalkbeat, Indiana. We'll be back with them to talk about what the coronavirus and statewide school closures mean for education in Indiana. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about what coronavirus has meant for education in Indiana. All schools shuttered their doors last week and will remain closed until at least May 1st. How have schools, teachers, employees, parents, and students adjusted? Let us know. We want to hear from you. As always, we would love your questions and comments on the topic. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Joining us via Skype today is Eric Weddle, WFYI's education reporter. That's our flagship station here in Indianapolis. Also with us is Emma K. Fitz, state education reporter at Chalkbeat, Indiana. And regarding those online comments, we have a comment from Carl on Facebook who says, this could be a great opportunity for schools to change the way we facilitate learning. A lot of schooling is stuck in the late 19th, early 20th centuries. Even though the world has changed and we know a lot more about how to optimize learning, schools haven't changed much. Emma Kate, I feel like schools have changed. They've implemented technology, but perhaps he's talking about the sit in front of a teacher in a classroom in front of a blackboard model.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what he's referencing specifically. And you are right that, you know, about half the schools in Indiana have gone to sort of a one-to-one technology to student ratio in recent years. And so we have seen in Indiana, especially, schools sort of embrace that idea. We're one of only 12 states that have a formal e-learning policy. So I do think Indiana, in that regard, seems to be a little ahead of the curve. Certainly, though, I know I've heard from teachers who have said they're working on getting creative. They're seeing this as a challenge. But there are some things that you just lose by not being face-to-face with students. And so I think that's the biggest concern.
Well, let's talk about e-learning, Emma-Kate. It's something that a lot of schools now, of course, have leaned into. Can you outline what it looks like for people who might not be familiar, for people who might not have kids who are dealing with this right now?
Sure. So I think the basic idea is that students are able to log on to, a content management system, a website where they can access schoolwork that their teachers are uploading. Oftentimes, teachers are also available during what would be regular school hours for emails or messages. I've heard from some teachers who are also, like we said, video conferencing with their students or with their classes when possible. It looks a little bit different, I think, at different districts, exactly how they set it up, whether it's, just exactly how those courses look and those assignments look. But that's the general outline, I think.
And you've reported that Indiana is actually ahead of a lot of other states when it comes to e-learning. What do you mean by that?
Well, Indiana is one of 12 states that has a formal e-learning policy. And so some other states, we have bureaus in other states at Chalkbeat, and their schools hadn't really tried doing e-learning yet. And so we quickly realized when we were talking with our colleagues in other states that even though Indiana's programs were really only set up to be like a day or 2 days if there was a snow day or a storm, that was still, more than some other areas in the country had done before.
During normal times, as in not right now, how does e-learning typically fit into a school's curriculum? Is it designed to be more of a supplemental backup?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to explain it. I think it's meant to be sort of a replacement for, otherwise closing school for weather-related issues. So it's meant to replace a snow day where students might, it might be a critical time of year and students would miss out on the lessons that they were supposed to be getting at that time of year. It's supposed to sort of cover that. But certainly I've talked to districts who said they never imagined doing this for more than a couple days at a time.
Eric, do we know which students are most likely to be disadvantaged by distance learning?
Well, it'll be the students, who don't have access, to Wi-Fi, to a device. And I think, that's what a lot of districts right now are trying to figure out is like how many of their students, do not have that. I guess it's a week ago now, Indianapolis Public Schools said they were trying to, quickly do a surveys, before the school closure happened. And I believe, they said that around 50% of students they felt who were surveyed, had access to, a device that they could do homework on and Wi-Fi. So we're probably going to see that, throughout the state and maybe it's certain schools, maybe it's rural areas. But I think that's something we're going to they'll have to figure out, and districts then have to decide if it works for them based on that type of availability of that resource.
We've heard of parking lots being converted to Wi-Fi hotspots for people who wouldn't otherwise have an internet connection, and even some students using Xboxes to access their work. So what efforts are you aware of to help students and teachers access those resources that they need to keep learning?
Well, I mean, I think there's been some internet companies stepping up, like Spectrum and Comcast. They're offering, free limited access, to K-12 and college students, and low-income families. And I think that's kind of what we're talking about. That's huge for a family who doesn't have that now. If they can get that free service, that's really going to help them a lot. Where I live, I'm in Midtown Indianapolis, and I know, within a mile of me, there's multiple public schools that have extremely different types of student bodies in that, in terms of how many students receive, free and reduced lunch and how many don't. So you could have a school where like everyone in the school is at a disadvantage, after having internet access, or in a school who doesn't have that at all. So I think those kind of abilities and ways to find a workaround is going to be really important for sure.
Marianne sent us this comment on Facebook. So many children in Indianapolis have already experienced permanent school closings over the last several years, also unexpectedly and for many more than once. Our family is among those. For us, this closing, while not permanent, brings back similar feelings of loss, disruption, and fear. As we look at which schools have been able to quickly continue instruction and which face more challenges. It seems like these children are once again disproportionately affected. Eric, at-home instruction also implies that a lot of parents and caretakers are having to fill in as the teacher. They're there to answer questions, keep kids on track as best they can. Have you heard from any parents about what that adjustment looks like for them?
Yeah, I mean, I have, and I mean, I can speak for myself. I have a first grader and a preschooler, and like, you know, I'm pretty stressed out about all of this, you know, as I'm sure a lot of moms and dads and grandparents and providers are, figuring out how to do this, you know, to be honest. I mean, I'm working full time. My wife is also an essential job. She's working, and, you know, we're not really sure how we're going to work this out. You know, right now IPS is on spring break, and I think we're kind of waiting to see, you know, what the district has in terms of its plan. But I think it's really difficult, I think, for families to think about teaching their student possibly, you know, all day long or being with them all day long while dealing with the stress of the coronavirus and the uncertainties of that, as well as, you know, loss of job or still trying, you know, to work. So I think it is stressful. And, you know, I think you also have, you know, in this day of social media, you know, you see families, you know, who are posting online how they have it kind of all figured out, you know, and some of them do have it figured out already. And I think that's great for, but I think also that can make other families kind of, you know, feel kind of demoralized, you know, about how they're going to do this, because this is all new. And I think everyone's going to have to work on it in their own way. And hopefully, you know, your school or your teacher or your school district is going to be able to provide support. And I think as we go forward, I'm expecting, you know, I'm hopeful that there's going to be a lot of like different ways and different sharing of resources across Indiana and the country that's going to like help families figure out how to do this if we're going to be out of school, you know, through May, through the summer, you know, and to see how we can teach our kids, basically.
And I can't imagine what the parents of high school students who are perhaps in advanced math or science that they might not be familiar with might be dealing with this. Are they having to study alongside their kids in order to help them? Who knows? Emma Kate, you've been following what these closures mean for special education as well. And for special education, you reported more than 173,000 students in Indiana receive special education services. So there's a spectrum there. What does that range of services look like?
Sure. So that can be everything from, you know, some additional one-on-one time with a teacher to, you know, more severe interventions and therapies, physical, occupational, speech therapy.
And Eric, of course, e-learning isn't the same as being in class, and there are going to be gaps for students across the board when they return to school. Is this something that'll just have to be evaluated and addressed in time?
Yeah, I think definitely. I think that's what we're going to look forward to. And, you know, my daughter's asked me, you know, will I be in second grade next year? And I mean, what I've kind of told her is like every first grader in the country is in the same position she's in. So, you know, looking as we go into next year, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of discussion on all levels, local, state, federal, as we kind of decide how we're going to address graduating onto that next school year for everybody. And making sure people are, you know, are still on grade level where they're supposed to be. Yeah.
Emma Kate, there are federal laws that ensure that children with disabilities receive the special education and related services that they need. And yet a lot of schools were given a short period of time to adapt. And some of those supports are very detailed. How are schools making the transition to offer that support from a distance?
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest questions that I've been hearing from districts in the past week is trying to make that transition. Even just today, Superintendent Jennifer McCormick in a webinar for school leaders was suggesting that schools should, you know, be calling parents and working to update their child's educational plan to include e-learning and what that could look like. Some things I've heard that schools are doing is, they're trying to offer therapy by sending instructions to parents for what kind of things they can do to continue working, whether that's physical therapy or speech therapy, sort of little things that they can do at home. I know some teachers, specifically special education teachers, who would work with smaller groups of students or individual students, are making time to, video call those students or try to give them that extra attention that they would be getting if they were in school as well. But it's certainly tricky. That's what I'm hearing from teachers. I mean, it can be difficult to evaluate students and where they're at and what services they need when you can't see them in person, just like it's tricky to try to give them therapy when you can't be in the same room with them. So I think we'll continue to see sort of the plans that schools come up with as time goes on.
There are a lot of heroes to thank these days, and teachers are certainly among them. And we got a comment from one of them. Jamie on Facebook writes, "I'm a mother of three and a math teacher in Northwest Indiana. It's definitely been difficult managing the education of my kindergarten, first and third grade children, and my seventh grade students, but I do manage. I teach in a low-income school district, so I'm mostly concerned for my students, many of whom do not have access to the internet or do not have an adequate device to access our learning management system. Another reason that I'm worried is that many of my students are special needs and or below level in both reading and math, and they're not getting the kind of intense intervention that my co-teacher and I usually provide." This has really, really thrown some challenges in the face of teachers who know their students. They know their challenges. Eric, have you talked to a teacher who has just really opened up in frustration about this?
I mean, I'm not sure if it'd be frustration or just more just like sadness in a way. You know, I mean, I know teachers, who are calling their students. They're doing videos online. They're sharing videos through YouTube and doing kind of video conferencing, a phone call. So yeah, I think these teachers know who in that room, needs that extra help. And they also usually know, what type of home life that student may have. So I think, the teachers I've talked to is like, it's kind of heartbreaking for them to kind of know that maybe a student is going to fall behind because of this. And it's just not, there's nothing else that they can really do from afar to help that, they are trying to reach out, but like you said earlier in the call or in the show, it's you do lose something not being in the classroom, looking at your students, interacting with students, when that's how students are used to learning. When students are so used to that one-on-one and having an aide in the room who can help them and take them aside.
Emma Kate, you spoke with parents who voiced their anxiety and concern about their child not having the day-to-day support that we're talking about, the support that they're used to. What did you hear from them?
I talked to one parent who just really bluntly said, "I don't know what to do," and she just really was, she's communicating with her child's, teacher and special education teacher, but she just felt really lost and unsure of what was best for her child, which is really hard to see. I talked to another parent whose child is blind, and she was facing trying to help him with algebra lessons in Braille, and that is, I think, tricky for anyone, but she's certainly not trained for how to do that, and she was saying that she's really focusing on giving herself a break, and she would encourage other parents to do that she was reminding herself to do the best she can. And while he might not be getting, as much algebra instruction, he's learning some critical, like, problem-solving skills and, really learning when he needs to be reaching out to his teacher versus when he can do it on his own. So that was kind of her perspective, and I thought that was a pretty good message that she was trying to share to other parents.
Eric, we know that a lot of students rely on more than just curriculum at school. Free and reduced meal programs are relied on by a lot of students across the state. Have closures meant that students have had to go without these meals?
Yeah, having a meal served to you every day, for sure, it's impacted students. I think we're seeing all over the state here in Indianapolis, just like school districts really going beyond what they normally do to provide meals. We've been trying to track a lot of those here, WFII, and, you know, we have a map that has, I think, more than 120 locations right now that are serving meals, you know, either daily or offering a week of food, you know, once or twice a week. So, yeah, that is a huge concern, you know, for everybody, you know, for the community in general, at these school districts. And, you know, they're trying different ways to get that food to students right now because, you know, for so many, I mean, you know, that's where they get breakfast. That's where they get their lunch.
And how are these meals finding their way to the students who need them?
Well, I mean, you know, there are a lot of static locations. You know, we have school districts that have their certain school buildings that are providing meals, certain churches, apartment complexes. You know, last week we had done a story on Wayne Township schools, and during last week, they provide schools via bus. They drove around to bus routes and provided meals. So there's different ways, and I think we will see that evolving, you know, as this closure continues into the next few months.
And indeed, we'll be talking to the superintendent of Metropolitan School District of Wayne Township, Dr. Jeff Butts, in our next segment. We've got to end it there. Eric Weddle is education reporter at WFYI. Thanks for your reporting, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
Emma Kate Fitz, state reporter for education at Chalkbeat, Indiana. Thanks for your time as well.
Thank you.
And we will close the show with that recent conversation with Dr. Jeff Butts from MSD of Wayne Township. About 70% of their students rely on meals provided by the school. We'll ask him about how they're handling it. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back now talking about how the coronavirus has affected schools all across Indiana. Statewide closures are in effect until at least the 1st of May, sending schools into uncharted waters. Joining us now to talk about how his school district has handled closures is Dr. Jeff Butts, the superintendent of the Metropolitan School District of Wayne Township. Jeff, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you for having me. This is an interesting situation. I'm glad to share anything that I can.
Well, and we know that the coronavirus has brought the regular routine of schools in Indiana and across the country to a grinding halt. And this is new territory for so many educators and administrators. As superintendent, what have been your major priorities in the face of this shutdown?
Well, we've had several, and we have put a plan into place. The number one, of course, is to try to continue the learning of our children to the best of our ability. Secondly, is to take care of our employees and making sure that their needs are being met and that we're able to continue to not contribute to some of the challenges economically that we see happening across the country. A third, of course, was for us to be able to clean and disinfect our buildings. And then fourth is to take care of some of those basic needs that we know our children have and that they depend upon the schools to provide.
And as we know, schools are a vital source of meals for many students in Indiana. How many students in your district rely on free and reduced meals?
Well, for the first time, the MSD of Wayne Township this year is participating in the community eligibility program for the federal child nutrition, lunch nutrition program, which means that every one of our children now receive a free breakfast and a free lunch, and in many of our schools, a free dinner. When we look at those who qualify for other assistance, about 78% of our children are receiving assistance with their textbooks, so quite a high number.
And your district came up with a very expedient solution to make sure kids still had access to those meals. What did that approach look like?
Well, we really wanted to make sure that transportation was not a deterrent for our children in getting and making sure that they continue to get those nutritious meals. We also wanted to make sure, because we don't have safe walking routes, that we came up with a unique solution that could deliver the meals directly to our children. And so our transportation department, in about 48 hours, completely rerouted nearly 70 buses to stop at over 1,000 locations in the MSD of Wayne Township in a safe location away from some of our major thoroughfares and without impeding traffic so that we could deliver those meals directly out to our students in our community. And we're having great success. The numbers continue to grow each day. Of course, we're on spring break now, but we're serving well over 5,000 meals, 5,000 breakfasts and 5,000 lunches at the end of last week, and look forward to continuing that on April the 6th when we come back or after the governor lifts the stay-at-home order.
So 48 hours, that's a quick turnaround. Was that enough time to consider how you might do this, or were those adjustments sort of made overnight?
I will tell you that in most cases, 48 hours would not be enough, but the amazing team that we have both at the transportation department and in our child nutrition department made sure that that was enough time. And they put those plans in place. They worked tirelessly to make sure that we could turn that around and have that available and communicate that out to our families. And so far, we have not had to make any significant adjustments to that schedule. I'd also mention, and this is something that is very humbling to me, we needed some additional coolers to be able to run those routes, and we reached out to our community. We needed about 400 of them, and on that Monday morning, we had 400 coolers sitting at our elementary schools that were donated by our community so that we could make sure to keep those items that needed to stay cool on the school buses could be kept cool while we were out there delivering those meals.
So your bus drivers and your cafeteria staff are busy. What's this transition been like for them? Have you heard from them?
You know, they're a service-oriented group to begin with, and they have a great passion for our community, for our children, for our staff. And so many have appreciated this opportunity, and it's all voluntary. We're paying them, but they are able to say, you know what, I'm not comfortable to come in. So these are individuals that have said, I do want to continue to work. I do want to continue to come in. And they have truly been rewarded. They've been very humbled. They've been very excited to be able to do this and to see their students. It's been a very rewarding experience for all of them.
What about the reaction from the students receiving these meals and the parents?
You know, I couldn't be more overwhelmed by the positive responses that we've had from our community, from alumni, from others who live in other communities. This has just been something that has been very well received. People greatly appreciate that this opportunity continues to exist, and they continue to have the opportunity to get those nutritious meals. For many of our children, this is the only opportunity. And of course, we're seeing what's happening at our grocery stores across, especially the West Side and across this country. And quite frankly, some of those items just are not available for our families if they can get to the grocery store and try to stock up.
And like, what is the proportion, I guess, of students that need these free and reduced meals that you're now delivering within your district? Are there quite a few?
There are, but we know that this continues to grow each day. If you think on average, we tend to serve about 12 to 13,000 lunches a day. And even by the end of last Friday, we were only handing out 5,000. We'd like to get back up to that 12 to 13,000 number. And I will tell you today, we served, because we are on spring break and our staff are on spring break as well, we did have child nutrition employees come in and we served almost 7,000 meals. However, those are breakfast and lunch for 2 days. So we continue to try to increase that number, and we want to make sure that everyone who needs a nutritious meal is able to get one, and we'll continue to prepare for that as we come back from spring break.
Is there any precedent for this kind of mass delivery in a normal summer, for instance? Are there opportunities for students to access meals?
There are opportunities through the summer servings program. However, you consider with those programs, we're typically going out, setting up locations, 20 to 25 locations around our community at libraries and apartment complexes and other facilities. Nothing to this magnitude, though. We've never had a situation like this that has been presented to us. And so many of these decisions are being made in response to this situation. And as we continue to get guidance from the governor and mayor's office, we're making those adjustments as necessary so that we can continue to provide as many services as we can to our children.
So we heard from the governor yesterday that it's a shelter in place order through April the 6th, the end of the first week of around the first or second week of April. Is your district planning to stay closed until that date, or is it the May 1st date that we heard earlier?
So as far as instruction goes with our students and our staff, we will not have our facilities back open until May the 1st, or that may be extended depending on the trajectory of the pandemic and how it continues to affect not only Hoosiers but Americans across the country. And so we are prepared right now to stay closed until May the 1st for students and staff. However, we will continue to provide remote learning for our students during that period of time, and we will have limited opportunities for staff to get back into the building so they can gain additional materials so they can be prepared to provide that remote learning for our students. From a feeding standpoint, we understand the governor's orders and then followed up by the mayor's orders soon after the governor's press conference that feeding of children, especially in a population like ours, is still considered an essential task. And so we will continue to provide meals for our children at the schools during spring break and then back on our school buses after spring break as we continue to follow those orders.
We're talking with Dr. Jeff Butts, the superintendent of the Metropolitan School District of Wayne Township. And you're not just delivering meals via school bus. The drivers are also delivering packets of homework. How is this being organized?
For some of our buses, this was a little bit of a challenge. But again, trying to take away the barrier of transportation and safe walking routes, we knew that not everyone could get in to get those paper packets. We are sending them out electronically to families through a program we have called Parent Square, which we have 98% of our parents who are signed up and have their contact information in there. But we know that not all of those parents are able to print out those packets when they receive them. And so we put packets on the bus with our bus drivers so that as they're going around, if a student comes up and says, I need a third grade packet, they are able to get a third grade packet of information that they can then work on. The other thing that we're going to start doing after spring break is we've been working with some of our local vendors and through our education foundation and through an effort, really a grassroots effort from some engaged community members, we're also going to start working with our bus drivers and child nutrition workers to pass out reading material for our students, books that we've received. And a huge part of that has been through a donation from Teachers Treasures that we've had a partnership with that is going to allow us to get reading material into children's hands.
And we've heard a lot about e-learning and homework packets and the kinds of things we're talking about, different strategies to keep kids on course as they lose weeks of traditional instruction. What's been your district's approach to continued education? Have you had to deal with kids that don't have internet access?
We do, and we even have some children who don't have devices. And so that has been our greatest challenge. We have not participated in e-learning days previously because we've always believed that the best learning happens in the classroom with the child's teacher and support staff. And so we have not replaced that learning in the past through these e-learning opportunities that I know many other districts have embarked upon in the past. However, we have had virtual learning in the MSD of Wayne Township since the 80s, when we had Indiana Online Academy, and then when we recreated the Achieve Virtual Education Academy, which is our online high school. We have a very well-trained and well-respected award-winning e-learning team that works here in the MSD of Wayne Township. Our CTO is the president of COSIN, a national technology organization. And so we have the capabilities and certainly have the knowledge base here. But we also know that teaching in the virtual environment is very different than it is in a traditional classroom. And so our teachers are doing some great work out there. I've been so impressed with what I've seen. But they have not received formal training in the professional development space for virtual education as they have for teaching in the regular classroom. And so that's an area of deficiency that obviously we have noticed, and I think several of our colleagues across the state have noticed.
We've heard from reporters today about the concerns around making sure that students with special needs and individualized learning plans continue to get the resources that they need. How has your district, Wayne Township, approached that?
I would also add to that our students who have limited English proficiency. So we have both of those populations who definitely were required to provide services for. We appreciate the guidance that we've received not only from the Indiana Department of Education, but also from the U.S. Department of Education. And new guidance comes out on a pretty regular basis as we continue to figure out how are we meeting the needs of those students who have specialized education plans or individual education plans. And so our Office of Special Services has been working directly with our special education teachers to make sure that we are reaching out and providing those services as needed for our students. We know that it will never be as good as that in-person support that we're able to provide, but this is also a new space for us in figuring out how to meet those unique needs that some of our children have. I know that we've been holding many case conferences with families virtually and making sure that we're staying current with the annual case reviews that we have with students. But again, it's another challenge, and especially when you throw on top of that the connectivity and the availability to have a device to stay connected.
And beyond teachers, schools also employ lots of workers who aren't necessarily salaried: assistants, custodians, part-time educators. Does your district have an idea of what these next few weeks will look like for those workers? Are they still getting paid?
You know, our Board of Education has been extremely committed to all of our employee groups, those that are certified, those that are classified, and has made a commitment to all of our employees that they will continue to be paid through the remainder of this school year, until which time we return. For some of those who are able to do an essential task within the guidelines that we receive for our district, they are able to earn some additional pay. But those that are not able to come in, or those who are able to perform a task either remotely or in person, they will continue to receive their normal pay as they have been contracted for the remainder of the year.
Aside from the curriculum, I'm sure there are a lot of disappointed students out there who are looking forward to these milestones and social events of spring, like graduation, spring sports, prom, things like that. It's a time that we're all being asked to make sacrifices, but what are you saying to students who are disappointed to miss these kinds of events?
That has been probably one of the more challenging conversations that I have had. We have, with my superintendent's cabinet, myself, we actually have been talking about how do we make accommodations for some of these things where we can. How do we address the situations with our students that, you know, for instance, our seniors are not going to get to experience some of the things that as seniors we look forward to. This is, of course, an extended senior skip time period. Not to be flippant, but they don't get to have that opportunity where they put one over on the administration and all don't attend on a certain day. They don't get the opportunity for, you know, end of the year pranks, the prom, as you mentioned, the graduation ceremonies. So what we have shared with our students is, depending on if or when we are able to come back, we will try to reschedule those things that we are able to do. If we don't make it back by the end of the school year, we are committed, if at all possible, and if permissible, to do a graduation ceremony. It will not look like our traditional ceremony at the fairgrounds, but we certainly want to give that opportunity and that experience to those who want to participate in it, if we are able to do so. And so I think those are all up in the air. We don't know right now when we're going to be allowed to come back, what that time frame looks like, if it's before the end of this school year, if it's before the beginning of the next school year. Just don't know those things right now.
All right, before we leave you, in a situation that's changing every single day, when it's hard to have these kind of concrete answers, what else do you want your community to know right now?
I just want my community and all communities across the state to know that we're all in this together. It's important for all of us to continue to follow the guidance and the recommendations from those who know much better than we do, that are experts in this area, that we're going to continue to band together to serve our neighbors, to watch out for those who may be more vulnerable, to make sure that we are providing opportunities for our children to the best of our ability, to continue to unite and band together, and we'll get through this. And things, systems, including schools, will look very different when we return. But until that time, we need to do everything we can to get this pandemic in order and to flatten that curve.
Dr. Jeff Butts, the superintendent of the Metropolitan School District of Wayne Township, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And we're wishing Indiana schools all the best in the coming weeks. Our show is produced by Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our technical director is Adam Gross. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. Be sure to subscribe so you always know what we're up to. And if you find yourself with a little extra time these days, why not catch up? We've had a lot of great shows lately. I'm Matt Pelser. Wash your hands and stay home. This is All In.